Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Okay. Okay. Yeah. Avoid. There's no Z in Sanskrit.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I know. Probably in Australia, everyone uses it.
Yeah.
But
Mathur and Rafa Yatra, you know.
Okay. 6:46. Vidikamo bhuvakrodo.
Vidikamo bhuvakrodo.
Lovas cha da 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 cha da.
Nobascha dararat chedat
Asya dvap sindhavo medran
Asya vap sindhavo medran
Niriti payur agashraya
Niriti payur agashraya
Vidikamo bhuvakrodo
Vidikamo bhuvakrodo
Nobascha dararat chedat
Nobascha
Asyad vak sindavo medran.
Asyad vak sindavo medran.
Niritik payur agashraya.
Niritik payur agashraya.
It's an extra syllable in the last line, but it's not that niriti is two syllables, it's three syllables, no way around it. Mm-hmm. It's just an irregularity. Extra syllable. Riddhi.
Riddhi.
From the heart.
From the heart.
Kamaha.
Kamaha.
Lust.
Lust.
Dhruvaha.
Dhruvaha.
From the eyebrows.
From the eyebrows.
Krodaha.
Krodaha.
Anger.
Anger.
Lobaha.
Lobaha.
Greed.
Greed.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Adaradachadat.
Adaradachadat.
From between the lips.
From between the lips.
Asyat.
Asyat.
From the mouth.
From the mouth.
Vak.
Vak.
Speaking.
Speaking.
Sindhavaha.
Sindhavaha.
Vsees.
Vsees.
Medrat.
Medrat.
From the penis.
From the penis.
Nirittihi.
Nirittihi.
Low activities.
Low activities.
Payoho.
Payoho.
From the anus.
From the anus.
Aga ashraya.
Aga ashraya.
Reservoir of all vices.
Reservoir of all vices.
Translation. Lust and desire became manifested from the heart of Brahma. Anger from between his eyebrows. Greed from between his lips. The power of speaking from his mouth. The ocean from his penis. And lo, and abominable activities from his anus, the source of all sins. Purport. A conditioned soul is under the influence of mental speculation. However great one may be in the estimation of mundane education and learning, he cannot be free from the influence of psychic activities. Therefore, it is very difficult to give up lust and desire for low activities, and desires for low activities, until one is in the line of devotional service to the Lord. When one is frustrated in lust and low desires, anger is generated from the mind and expressed from between the eyebrows. Ordinary men are therefore advised to concentrate the mind by focusing on the place between the eyebrows. Whereas the devotees of the Lord are already practiced to please, to place the Supreme Personality of Godhead on the seat of their minds. The theory of becoming desirelessness is untenable because the mind cannot be made desireless. When it is recommended that one be desireless, it is understood that one should not desire things which are destructive to spiritual values. A devotee of the Lord always has the Lord in his mind, and thus he does not need to be desireless, because all his desires are in relationship with the service of the Lord. The power of speaking is called Saraswati, or the goddess of learning, and the birthplace of the goddess of learning is the mouth of Brahma. Even if a man is endowed with the favor of the goddess of learning, it is quite possible for his heart to be full of lust and material desire, and his eyebrows to display symptoms of anger. One may be very learned in the mundane estimation, but that does not mean that he is free from all low activities of lust and anger. Good qualifications can be expected only from a pure devotee who is always engaged in the thought of the Lord or in samadhi with faith. So, Saraswati is manifested here. Her name is Vach. But she has two forms. There is Divya Saraswati, Tasya Divya Saraswati. It was Divya Saraswati who was mentioned in the Brahma Samhita, who gave instruction and initiation to Lord Brahma. Tena Siddhi Bhavishyati. You will become perfect by chanting this mantra. That was Divya Saraswati speaking to him. She's in the process of giving him initiation, Brahma. So she's his daughter. Anything, anyone who's manifest in the material world has to take birth from Brahma or his progeny. Brahma's not anybody's child, but still she's giving him initiation. This is the Divya Saraswati. She's actually a transcendental person. The language is originally divine. It's not a thing of this world. It's actually the means by which the God and the gods communicate with us. It is through language. And then we, in turn, can communicate with them through language. That is the medium between the higher world and the lower world. Ultimately, the spiritual world is where it comes from. This Vak, the original divine form of speech, is embodied in the Vedas. It's language, but it's not ordinary language. The original form of language is perfect. And it's eternal. And it doesn't have any personal origin. The words of the Vedas, the text of the Vedas, is aparushaya. Nobody wrote them. We can say Krishna wrote them, because they're the manifestation of Krishna's intelligence. But even Krishna does not claim for himself the position of author of the Vedas. Vedais cha sarvair aham eva vedyo vedanta kvid veda vid eva chaham. By all the Vedas, it is I who am to be known. In other words, although the Vedas seem to be talking about many things and many personalities, the real message of the Vedas is the glorification and the understanding of Krishna, the original personality, the supreme person. Vedanta kvid eva veda vid eva chaham. I am the author of the Vedanta, appearing in my Leela avatar of Vyasadeva. I wrote this book, Vedanta Sutra. Veda Veda Vachamam. And he doesn't say I'm also the author of the Vedas. He says I'm the knower of the Vedas. So, on one hand, we can say that Krishna is the author because he's the creator of everything. On the other hand, the Vedas weren't written. They're eternally manifest. They're coexistent with God, just like the Jivas are. There's never a time, Natvevaham Jatunasam, Not Twam Neme Janadipa. Never was there a time when you did not exist, nor I did not exist, nor you, nor anybody present on the battlefield. And we can add another line. Nor was there any time when the Vedas did not exist. They're also co-eternal with God. So in that sense, nobody wrote them, not even Krishna. Being a Paurusheya, they're infallible and never changing, eternal. This Shruti, the Vedic Vak, exists eternally, and rather than being a description of historical events, it's the original script and the creation of the world and the events of history are following that script. The Vedas come first, and they're actually coming from the spiritual world. By Vak, we communicate with the higher beings. We offer sacrifice, we chant the Vedic mantras. Even if we don't know this language, we memorize and chant the mantras, and those mantras speak to the demigods. We don't understand it, but they can understand the language. So the Vedas are not books meant really for human understanding. They're just like we talk to computers in a language that is not really our language. Computer language is really meant for the computer to understand. And the computer has interpreters and compilers to turn something we can understand into something the computer can understand. But the computer language is for the information, for the enlightenment of the computer, to give it instruction. Like that, the Vedic language is meant, addressed to the devatas who are being worshipped and glorified. It's not meant for our understanding, actually. Although in past ages, there were great pundits and rishis among the human society who could more or less, to some extent, understand the Vedic mantras. Not only memorize them and chant them nicely, but they had some understanding. But no human being can completely understand the Vedas. It's just not meant for human understanding. Other books are written to explain the Vedas for human beings. That's why, even though we're Vedic, we don't study the Vedas much, especially in Kali Yuga. We don't have access. Some people are trying. Universities are studying, but they're just, you know, picking on the outside crust. They're really not understanding what's going on in the Vedas. So this power of speech, she manifests in that original form. Divine, Divya Saraswati. Actually, spiritual energy. Coming from this is communication coming to us from the spiritual world. And then it's two ways. We can communicate back again to the spiritual world using the same language by chanting the mantras. We don't know what the language is, so we're given formulas. Just like you go on Sankirtan in a foreign country, you learn some mantras. Japanese, please give me a donation. You know, I don't know any Japanese, but I know if I do a few lines, I can go out and do Sankirtan. That's mantra. You know, formula. You recite the formula, even though you don't know the grammar, you don't know any of the words mean, just recite the formula. That's a mantra. So the Vedic language, which is originally expression of the glories of the Supreme Lord manifested as his different expansions, the demigods in the material world. It's a living language, but for us it's just some formulas we recite, because we don't know the language. We just memorize some mantras, perform some ritual, and that's our way with communicating with the higher world. For us it's ritual and just formulas. For them, that's, you know, just like man, a human being. His life, he has life at home, but he's only at home for a few hours a day. And even then he's tired and sitting in front of the TV. So, he only has a few minutes of quality time with his family in the real world. Most men don't associate that much with their wife and children because they're too busy during the day. And when they come home, they're too tired to do anything. And they just sit in front of the TV or something else, some other stupid, entertainment. Demigods also, their work, they have to eat too. But for them, the Vedic language is their means, they eat by language. Like some people make a living by intellectual pursuits. Some people are poets and they make a living by using language. Well, the demigods live by language. They recite the Vedic mantras and worship the Supreme Lord that way, through the Vedic mantras. And that's their livelihood. They worship the Supreme, and in turn, it's arranged that the human beings down on the earth worship them, using the same Vedic mantras. That's how they get their food. You know, they put their food on the table and pay their rent based on the fact that somebody down below is performing sacrifice for them. Just like a man has a business. He's, you see, in the Indian shops, there's always some guy, not dressed very nicely, fat old guy, sitting, you know, somewhere in the store, maybe just in the back. He's the manager. He's the owner. Or somebody appointed by the owner to manage. He doesn't do anything. He just sits there. Because the people who are working there are shudras. They can't be trusted. If you leave them alone, they'll go to sleep or they'll steal everything. So there's always that guy sitting in the shop doing nothing, just supervising. What was that point?
The day was there, they were lying on...
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like that. Like that. There's a proprietor or a manager who's just there watching to see that everything goes on and nobody cheats or goes to sleep. Like that. The demigods don't have to do the work. They're just the supervisors. They can count on us to do the actual sacrificial work. And they can sit back and drink soba juice and watch the apsaras dance and enjoy life. And letting someone else do the work. That's just capitalism. Or it's how it also works in so-called communism. Whoever's got the smarts and the money, let someone else do the work. So the demigods are empowered to enjoy life. And we have to toil. And if we're in the Vedic system, we're helping maintain the universe. We're employees. Those who are outside the Vedic system, they're unemployed. They're just like beggars or people on welfare, somehow getting, you know, surviving. But they don't have any regular employment. If you're outside the Vedic system, Varnashram, you don't have any regular employment. Regular employment means to be help participating in maintaining the universe by performing sacrifice. You're helping to feed and provide the needs of life for the demigods by performing sacrifice. And that's done through that same Vedic language. So that's the purpose, the function of Divya Vav. So that's what entering the material world. Everything's going on that basis, on the higher level. There are some people who are like derelicts in the gutter, who are, you know, alcoholics and others, who just beg a few coins and manage to eat and get their liquor. But they're not real members of society. The real society is based on Varnashram. It's based on this Divya Saraswati. Everything in the world is created from Saraswati. But then, everything in the material world becomes perverted. Saraswati has also got her degraded sister. Mundane language. People forget. Human beings forget the original language, and they adopt some corrupted form of language. They lose their intelligence for various reasons, because they can become involved in sinful life. A person who is sinless will be a Brahmana. And if he's a real Brahmana, he'll understand the Vedic language and speak it. They used to be Brahmins like that. But as the ages progress, and Brahmanas become degraded, and everybody else becomes more degraded, ordinary language manifests. So the classical Sanskrit is actually the Adivya Saraswati. Although in that language, the great sages can express the message of the Vedas. So the Smriti, although spoken in mundane language, is still divinely empowered. Just like Prabhupada is speaking in this Mlecha language, English, the language of butchers. Yeah, butchering animals and butchering each other, that's the business of the speakers of the English language. Bloody butchers. But he's using this language of bloody butchers to translate Srimad Bhagavatam. And he's doing it very, very effectively and elegantly. Prabhupada, whatever complaints anybody has about his grammatical correctness, he is a very competent poet. He studied English, 19th century English poetry.
And that's where his strength of language comes from. He's translating into a beautiful English. He learned that beautiful English also. That's what he went to school for. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur before him and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, they learned the English language very well. Different styles of it. And we're getting from Prabhupada his version of English. But what he's expressing is the original divine message of Divya Saraswati translated into mundane language. In this case, English, ordinary English. Or somewhat archaic English. Iskandese English. But also classical Sanskrit is a mundane version, perverted version of the original Sanskrit. And then later on, I don't know, maybe 5th century BC, people became even more degraded. They couldn't even properly speak Sanskrit anymore. In previous centuries, before that, if someone spoke wrong, the teacher would slap him and he would learn to speak right. But the students became so stupid that gradually the teachers couldn't do anything. And Prakrit evolved. You know, slapping him in the face wasn't enough to keep the language from degrading. So people started speaking Prakrit, degraded Sanskrit. And that further degraded into the modern Indian languages and around the world. I just swallowed a fly. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Around the world, so many other languages have evolved. Corrupted language. The Saraswati has her two forms. It's the original form that's being described in this chapter. It's actually the same divine personality, but she's seen in different forms. The material energy is not different than the spiritual energy. But it's our vision that's different. Krishna's internal potency becomes the material potency when we become attracted to enjoy her. When Ravana wanted to steal Sita, she was replaced by the Maya Sita. So Saraswati replaced by the Maya Saraswati as soon as we want to enjoy her. Yeah.
Where
else? Can you give me some water? Quick. And that's maybe the significance of what's going to be described in the verse that comes up about Brahma being attracted to his daughter. This is the beginning of the transformation of divine language into mundane language. And it happens because we want to use it for material purposes. Then it becomes material. When we want to use Krishna's energy for material purposes, the spiritual energy turns into the material energy. Okay, I'll have to stop here. Any questions or comments?
I've got quite a few questions. Yeah. I always said that, you know, that Divya Saraswati is that there's a difference between Divya Saraswati and Saraswati, the wife of Lord Brahma. That, like, sort of.
Well, the thing is, for her, something has to. Something unnatural in the daughter becoming the wife, no?
Yeah.
So that means she's already transformed into the mundane Saraswati.
Yeah.
To become Brahma's wife.
Yeah.
Divya Saraswati is one of the consorts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yeah.
She's one of Narayan's 16 energies.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm. And she appeared as the second wife of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, no?
Oh.
First?
No.
No, who was it? Okay, maybe I get that wrong.
One was Guru and one was
Nero. Okay, maybe I'm wrong. Vak may be an expansion of one of the two.
Oh.
Anyway, she's originally the consort of Narayan.
Yeah.
So for Jiva to become her consort, she's got to replace herself with her material counterpart.
Yeah.
So Brahma's wife is the second Saraswati.
Right. So yeah, there is a difference. because I remember reading, and there's that the story of Tulsi Devi in Brahma Vaivarta Purana, and it tells gives some information that Lord Vishnu is there with his wives Lakshmi, Saraswati, Ganga, and Tulsi.
Yeah.
And you know that maybe there was some fighting.
Anyway, when you get to the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, is in the mode of passion.
Yeah.
So you're going to expect that there's going to be a lot of possible confusion between material and spiritual energies.
Yeah.
It is strongly influenced by the mode of passion. Mm. The original spiritual energies are all manifesting in their materialized forms.
Yeah.
And so things are happening that you don't expect to happen between Krishna and his internal energy and Krishna's devotees and his internal energy. Because
yeah.
It's really being transformed into the material counterpart
right.
by the influence of the mode of passion.
Mm-hmm. I heard that Brahma Vaivarta Purana is one of the most altered of the Puranas.
The most which?
And the most meddled with, you know, changed around.
I don't know.
And somebody was saying Brahma Vaivarta and Bhavishya.
Bhavishya is more than 50% bogus.
Right.
But Brahma Vaivarta, I didn't know. That may just be a reaction to strange things that are described about Krishna and his devotees in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana.
Right.
But I don't know if that's the proper explanation that it's bogus, or the good parts of it are bogus. I think it's more that these are different versions of the pastimes because they're perverted reflections of the original pastimes as reflected in the material and atmosphere. Yeah. I don't think it's that they're not factual. There may be. I mean, that I haven't seen where that idea comes from. The Brahma Vaivarta is heavily doctored.
Yeah, it's just something I heard.
We'd have to trace it out. Who said that and on what basis?
Yeah. Well, that's something that Andrew Brew told me, but he would have heard it from somewhere
yeah.
else.
Okay, but that's, I mean, let's call it itihas. We've lost the Purana.
Yeah.
We don't know where it's coming
from. As it's that's true.
I mean, that's a scholarly opinion. So, not, you know, unless you could say that, you know, Vishnu Chakravarti or Prabhupada said it,
yeah.
I mean, you can't accept it just on authority. We have to see the evidence then.
Yeah, sure. you know, in this case, you know, the material aspect of Saraswati is manifesting as Brahma's daughter. And then how does she become his wife?
Well, that was his problem. And he became lusty after her.
Yeah.
So arrangement was made. She expanded into the second form. He became his wife.
And he changed his body as well.
He changed his body also. But he's changing his body is actually just a subtle thing.
Yeah.
He didn't die.
Yeah.
He's the same person. And so
yeah.
Anyway, he's got the most subtle body in the world, in the universe, because he's the most subtle being.
Yeah.
We don't generally give up our subtle body.
Mm.
But he's giving up what for us would be a subtle body, but for him it's his gross body.
Yeah.
He's got a super subtle body, and then his regular body, which is more subtle than our subtle body. But so that those what for him is gross body, that's what he's giving up. But he's not dying in the process.
He has another wife called Savitri, I think.
Gayatri. Yeah, there's a story about that. That I don't know where that's told. I'm just getting this on here. So that he was performing a sacrifice and Saraswati wasn't present.
Yeah.
And the sacrifice required that the wife be present.
Mm.
So he temporarily created Gayatri.
Out of the cow.
Out of a cow, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, this makes the story already suspect as literal history, because Gayatri existed from the beginning of creation.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, she be manifested or whatever, he created her. Not really as his wife, because she's just something he created. But just to be in his, to have a wife to sit in the sacrifice, he created her. But Saraswati came back and she was not very happy about it.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened after that.
She cursed him that he wouldn't be worshipped by anyone.
Okay.
And he's only worshipped in that place, Cusco.
Two places, but that's one of them.
Yeah.
Two
places. I saw he was worshipped in Singapore as well. They had a bigger.
Yeah, also in Bangkok. In Thailand.
Thailand.
Actually, it's probably. Yeah, so Thailand, Malaysia. Yeah. But especially in Thailand.
Yeah.
They worship him.
I think that's in Navadvip Dhamma. Yeah, that's true. I have one last question.
Yes.
When it's describing the narration of the Vyasadevs in the Vishnu Purana, how it gives the list of the various
Vyasadevs.
Yeah, and the various Vyasadevs, and how only this one's the incarnation of Godhead, and the others, and previous ones like Parashara and Vishishta.
Yes.
And it said, it made the comment that only the personality of Godhead could compile the Mahabharata.
Konyos Kohyanyo Pundarikakshad Mahabharata Pridbhavit.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're talking about like Vedas being the eternal, and they're always there, and it's like a script. But in the case of the Mahabharata, it seems like
Smriti.
It's Smriti.
Yes.
Smriti is also there.
No.
Oh, it's just teaching eternal principles.
Well, it may be eternal, but it's rewritten every time. There may always be a Mahabharata. The Mahabharata is written in various forms. In fact, the Mahabharata mentions that it exists in at least 6 different forms, told by different sages.
Oh, right.
Different lengths and different words.
Oh, right.
We have the Jaimini Mahabharata, the Vaishampayana Mahabharata. They're different texts.
Yeah.
Shukadev spoke the Mahabharata to the Pandavas in 2 million verses. That's mentioned in Vaishampayana's Mahabharata.
Oh,
right. So it's not that, okay, if we accept Vaishampayana Mahabharata, these others are rivals. They can't all be. No, but the Vaishampayana's Mahabharata, the one that we call the Mahabharata, says that there are other Mahabharatas.
Yeah.
It mentions Jaimini's and Shukadev's.
Right.
So that's the nature of Smriti. It can be re-spoken in different words by different authors.
Okay.
It may always exist in some form or another, but the form changes.
Right.
Mahabharata is Smriti. So Vyasadeva is the author of at least this current Mahabharata, and then through his disciples it assumed various forms. It appeared in different versions. He's the author of 3 books, Vedanta, Sutra, Mahabharata, and then the Bhagavatam, but the Bhagavatam he's not really the author. The Bhagavatam is secretly Smriti. Shruti.
Yeah.
Text of the Bhagavatam is actually eternal.
Yeah.
So, but he's credited, he's known as the author.
Yeah. I can't remember, my memory is really foggy, but I think in Vaigya Bhagavatam, then I think the book of Sam is describing, how.
Lago Bhagavatam.
Yeah. And he's describing how the Shastras come about every time. Is it? Or, I remember he describes about the universes, how they sometimes create the same, sometimes different.
Yes.
I can't remember if he says the same about the Shastras or something.
That I don't remember.
Maybe in Lago Bhagavatam.
In Lago Bhagavatam, is it?
Yeah.
We can look. Okay. Hey, get off Krishna's clothes.
So Vedanta Sutra is like also eternal, then? Like a Shruti kind of?
Vedanta Sutra?
Yeah.
There's no claim to that.
Oh.
This is considered, Vedanta Sutra and Mahabharata are considered Vyasadeva's own contributions, his own compositions.
Yeah, I see.
So it's not in the category of Shruti, it's a commentary on Shruti. By a particular person, by Vyasadeva. By Bhadarayana Vyas.
Yeah. And it always seems strange that, in the Bhagavatam mentions the Ashvatthama's going to become one of the Shaptarishis, and it mentions.
Does it mention in the Bhagavatam?
Yeah, it says he's going to become a Shaptarishi there, and then in the Vishnu Purana it mentions he's going to become the next Vyasadeva.
Yes.
So it's like, how's that happening?
He wasn't. He was under bad influence, because Dronacharya was a friend of Duryodhana's, and he became affected by that, and his son was really affected by it. He had some bad qualities, not completely bad. So he's currently undergoing great austerities, and he's getting rectified. Although, I don't know what kind of Mahabharata he's going to produce. Yeah, what story are you going to hear in his Mahabharata?
I think I thought that he won't produce a Mahabharata.
He won't? Okay.
Because only the personality got it, maybe. That's I thought that's what it was.
Okay, that statement is there.
Yeah.
No, but that doesn't mean that nobody else can create a Mahabharata.
Oh, right.
That means that the Mahabharata we have is so perfect that nobody but Vishnu can create it. Right. It doesn't mean that in the next Manvantara there might be some other inferior Mahabharata. There might be.
Right.
Okay, so Ashwatthama can't create a Mahabharata. He just can't create this kind of Mahabharata.
I guess this Mahabharata is special because it's got Krishna in it, and Krishna was present there at the time in this Mahabharata.
Yes. Well, I don't know if you can write an honest Mahabharata that leaves out Krishna altogether.
Yeah.
Even Vaishampayana's Mahabharata puts Krishna pretty much in the background.
Yeah.
You know, we only get hints. Beside the Bhagavad Gita, there's only some other places just here and there we get any idea that Krishna is actually supreme.
Mm.
He seems to be very subordinate. And you know, and we don't really see his real personality or even much about his real pastimes. Just hints of it. And Jaimini's Mahabharata is supposed to present Krishna more fully.
Mm.
Anyway, we'll see what Ashwatthama turns into.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.